This is iRadio's
group chat.
If you're talking about it,
we're talking about it
on iRadio.
Today on iRadio's group chat, we're talking about something that a lot of young people struggle with but don't always have the words for: body dysmorphia, and it can have a huge impact on your mental health. Joining us is someone who knows this experience firsthand. Keith Russell is a mental health advocate, podcaster, and the founder of The Endless Spiral, which is an award-nominated platform where he shares real stories about mental health, body image, and recovery as well. Welcome to iRadio's group chat, Keith. Thanks for coming on and having a chat with us. You've been really open about your struggles with body dysmorphia in your own life. When was the moment that you first noticed it?
Every time I look back at things, my story kind of evolves all the time. And originally when I kind of, a couple of years ago when I started to share my story, I used to kind of say, when I was about 13 years of age, I went life-saving classes, and they're obviously different than swimming lessons. So swimming lessons, I could swim before I could walk. So I was used to being in the pool, but being in the pool, I was fine. But when I started doing the life-saving classes, you had to kind of get out of the pool a lot and stand on the side of the pool. And when I look back, that's kind of the first time I remember kind of being self-conscious about myself and how I looked. And I started to compare myself a lot to everyone else that was standing around me. I started to criticize myself. The negative thoughts started to come in. But up until that point, I don't really ever remember feeling self-conscious. I suppose in your early teens, you're starting to become aware of a lot of things, and puberty is kicking in, and your body is starting to change anyway. But all these are all the things I can rationalize my thoughts with now. But at the time, I suppose once the negative thoughts seep in, it's very hard to shake them.
It's kind of one of those things when you look back in hindsight, you can see all of the rationale behind that. But I imagine when you're in it, it's obviously really confusing and challenging, and you don't quite understand why or what is happening. But as body dysmorphia became a bigger thing in your life, what did it start to feel like day to day?
It impacted my day to day completely. It consumed my nearly every thought. It consumed my decision making. It consumed my social life. It consumed my love life. It consumed any relationship I had with anybody, really. I started to withdraw myself. I started to become very depressed. I started to have a very negative outlook on myself. I didn't have any self-confidence at all. It would impact so many things. I would be constantly pulling out my clothes. Basically, if anyone's unsure about body dysmorphia, it can affect people differently, obviously. So it can affect your weight, or it can affect your shape, or it can affect both. For me, it was a little of both. I would sit there and I would start from the top of my body to the bottom, and I would go through all of the things on my body I didn't like about myself. And I would do that multiple times a day. And I guess when you start telling yourself these negative thoughts about yourself, you're eventually going to believe them. So even for an example, if I was in a car, I wouldn't like traffic pulling up beside me because I didn't like my side profile. I never liked pictures taken of me. I thought I had weight on my lower back, so I didn't like, leaning forward because I thought my t-shirt would be too tight and people would look at my lower back. It can be so irrational. I mean, I didn't want to go bowling. I didn't want to, and I was quite good at pool and snooker, and I played it a lot, but even with that, I didn't like leaning over the table. If I was in work, I didn't like leaning a certain way. It affected my day to day, all the time, and it affected my thought process all the time.
What was the turning point for you when you realized maybe this is something I should get help over? What was that process like for you then, helping yourself to deal with and overcome it on a daily basis to a certain extent?
Yeah, I went to therapy in my early 20s for depression, and I went to therapy kind of in my early 30s for anxiety. And I never really spoke about kind of where the anxiety was coming from and where the depression was coming from. I was always linking it to other things. It was during COVID, and I just was working from home, and I just was sitting there one day, and I just decided to write. And I used to write when I was a kid, and I just wanted to write a blog, and I had really no kind of goal in mind of where this blog was going to go or what it was going to be about. And I just started writing, and just my kind of thoughts started to kind of come out, and I shared it, and then I wrote another blog, and all of a sudden, as kind of the analogy I used, the onion started to unravel, and people were coming to me, and they were like, you know, have you ever heard of body dysmorphia? And I obviously was mentioning things in the blogs, and people were picking up on them. And I looked up the term body dysmorphia online, and the light bulb went off over my head, and I was like, oh wow, there's actually a condition for how I've been feeling all this time. I knew I had an issue with food. I knew I had an issue with exercise. I knew I had an issue with the negative thoughts about myself. But it was only when I was able to kind of look up the term and start to realize all of the things that go with body dysmorphia. It was like a tick box. Like everything I was reading was like, that's me, that's me, that's me. I was just ticking all these boxes. And it really was just like a weight lifted off my shoulders. I was able to go back and start to piece everything together and go, wow, maybe I made that decision because of this, and maybe I had that relationship with food. You know, there's a deeper meaning to all of this. Of course there is. I had a lack of self-worth kind of in me anyway, which made me more susceptible to these negative thoughts. But the way I was acting and feeling, turned out I was living with a condition called body dysmorphic disorder that I had never even heard of until I was about 40.
It's so freeing. That's what a lot of people say when you get a label put on something like that, and you go, oh my God, this, it suddenly makes a level of sense, even though it's still just as horrible to deal with, and it's so challenging knowing that you're not the only one with it, and that this is something that can be diagnosed and stuff, I imagine really helps. But you've spoken a lot about breaking the stigma for men in particular around body dysmorphia. Obviously it's November, we're trying to break those stigmas at the moment. Why do you think that men in particular are still struggling so much to admit that they might be struggling with their mental health?
I think it's this stereotypical image in society that men have of kind of, you know, they're strong and dominant and masculine, and then we've got the toxic masculinity that comes into it, which can kind of raise its nasty head on social media. I think the conversation around mental health in men in particular is getting better. I think the whole conversation with body image and even eating disorders is where the stigma kicks in even more. I don't know many men who talk about body dysmorphia or even their body at all, really. I mean, I give talks in schools and I try and educate kids about kind of loving their bodies and what their bodies can do, rather than how they look. And I find, just when you mentioned about freeing, just even talking to kind of kids or teenagers in schools, for example, or even when I do, like, you know, when I do the podcast and I speak to a man, it is, you feel like you're part of a community when you can speak to another man or anyone in particular, and you can relate to them and they can relate to you. And exactly as you just said, you just kind of look at, you know, you look at them and go, well, I'm not alone in this, which is what I think a lot of men feel for a long time. Because I know I did. I felt very alone. And when I started talking about it and I started kind of it can be, you know, the podcast and doing interviews or even just talking to anyone. You do, as you like, as we both just said, you do feel like you're part of a community, or you can feel like, wow, I'm not alone. And that's really the first step, is feeling not alone, or even to feel heard. I know for me, for example, with the body image issues, I don't, and a lot of men don't, fit the stereotypical image of maybe someone who would struggle with their, with food or with how they look. So I found it quite easy to sweep things under the rug for a long time. I really had to address it myself and take responsibility and accountability for my own thoughts. And that was very freeing and therapeutic as well. You know, it's not just talking to someone else. I really had to address my own thoughts as well.
I imagine that social media nowadays could be a massive trigger for people that, that suffer with body dysmorphic disorder, because there's so much online conversation about gym culture, filters, and there's so much comparison. Do you think that social media is kind of shaping that?
Yeah, I mean, like, I put up a post on my own Instagram probably last week that addressed something very similar to this, and I was explaining the difference between body dysmorphia and muscle dysmorphia. And the muscle dysmorphia is obviously, it's when anyone really can feel that they're not muscular enough. And that, a lot of that comes from social media as well. The whole kind of comparison is, you know, it's detrimental to male and female. It's not, you know, someone with an eating disorder or body image issues isn't, it's not determined by gender. It's not determined by age. It can affect anyone and everyone. And I know myself, I have to start filtering out my content on social media, because the gym culture or the diets, or, you know, people who are even like certain influencers who we all know, I suppose, you might, and we look, we do it ourselves. You might take 20 pictures and you'll post one. It's a snapshot into somebody's life. It's not reality. And that's what I try and get across as well. When I say, for example, when I'm doing my talks, is to try and, you know, educate people, or the younger generation as well, that look, it's not necessarily reality. It's a snapshot into someone's life. It's what they want you to see. And I think when you start kind of accepting that, you can kind of realize to yourself that, yeah, look, I am myself, or I'm good enough myself. I don't need to be comparing my life to someone else on social media when it's not really reality anyway.
Yeah. Talk me through the endless spiral, because I think it ties in really well with that particular thing that you've just said about comparison.
Like, the name The Endless Spiral came from, I mean, it's probably self-explanatory to be honest, but I always felt I was caught in an endless spiral of negative thoughts. That's where the name came from. I always make a joke, I'm surprised I didn't call one of my children The Endless Spiral, because I had the name in my head for so long. So like, it started off with the blog, and then it progressed into the podcast, and now The Endless Spiral is it's talks, like I said, in schools. It's a blogging community. It's not just my blog. People can upload their blogs to it, and because I know some people aren't, like, they're not comfortable maybe speaking on the podcast. And I know for me, for example, writing was very cathartic and therapeutic for me, and it's a nice outlet for some people to be able to share their story that way. I had a struggle at the beginning with the podcast to get guys on to speak about certain topics, and that obviously is improving as well. So yeah, so like the Endless Spiral, I mean, it's the website, it's the talks, it's a bit of everything really, because some people struggle with food, some people struggle with exercise, some people struggle with just their mental health in general. So yeah, it's not necessarily just for men. I know when I do interviews, I try and advocate for men as well, but the Endless Spiral itself is for everybody. It's not even just for me.
So many people can relate to that concept of the Endless Spiral. It's a brilliantly placed name on something like this, for sure. And my final question for you, what's one thing that if there's someone listening this evening who is struggling and feeling overwhelmed by body image thoughts, thinking possibly that they could be suffering with body dysmorphia, what is one thing you would encourage them to do today?
Is to reach out to somebody. I know that probably sounds very basic or very generalized statement, but I stayed silent for 3/4 of my life. And it doesn't do me any favors, and it won't do anyone else any favors. If you don't speak to someone, then nobody can know how you're feeling, and you will literally be left in this endless spiral, and you will never get out of it. So reach out to somebody, talk to somebody. I mean, I always mention BodyWise because I find them amazing. They have a support line there, you know, when it comes to eating disorders, but even just someone you trust, a friend, a sibling, just talk to someone and tell them how you're feeling. It really can be that simple.
Keith, where can we find you on social media if there's people looking to follow along with the endless spiral after listening to you this evening?
Yeah, so my social media is I am Keith Russell, or you can just Google The Endless Spiral, and it's called The Endless Spiral on social media as well, or theendlessspiral.com. I'm fairly easy to find.
Keith, I really appreciate everything you've said this evening. I think it's really going to hit home with people. Such, you know, moving advice. I know it can be sometimes come across so simple to tell people to talk about their feelings, but people really do need that reminder, I think. I know sometimes I need reminders about that in my own life. So thanks so much for coming on iRadio's group chat, and I'm sure we will catch up with you again on the show.
Thanks for having me.
This is iRadio's group chat. If you're talking about it,
we're talking about it
on iRadio.